Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Viewer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to, yes, this is an active podcast. For the first time in 4 months, you get to hear the dulcet tones of the Luke Viewer. And unfortunately for you, your significant other, and who else is in the vehicle, I don't know. How would you describe my voice? I know it's not pleasant to listen to, but I will say this. You've often told me this every time we see each other in person, Luke. I do have a face for radio. I'm not pleasant to look at. Not sure why my wife did marry me, but we are back to talk, Luke.
Yeah, I think generally speaking, I've listened to your voice a lot. I actually think you're selling yourself short. It's pretty solid. But in the grand scheme of things, what really people stick around for is when you get really animated, right? When you get really frustrated, really kills. So
yeah, when my voice goes up a couple of octaves, and
yeah,
usually it's around one specific position group, but in my 15th season now covering this team, I'm going to try to change my best with a necton mentality here in 2025. And even at that, I think we're going to become a Timberwolves podcast at this rate. So we can just spend the next 15 minutes naming random Timberwolves of yesteryear, where I tweeted out this morning a collection of 4 pictures of obscure Wolves from the 90s, 2000s, 2010s. And to my amazement, Luke Viewer knew every single one of those, from Trenton Hassel to Rosho Nesterovic.
Yeah.
I thought about putting a Terrell Brandon photo in there.
Oh, I could have gotten that one too. I think I do generally pretty well at Timberwolves like picture trivia. Like that's definitely a place that I spent a fair amount of my childhood. It was between Gopher Sports and Timberwolves, also the Vikings, but more so the Timberwolves probably.
Yeah, I don't know. By the time people are listening to this, the Wolves might actually be in the Western Conference Finals in back-to-back seasons, which is fun to see, but I think, Luke, you and I could spend the next 20 minutes just listing off obscure Timberwolves.
We shouldn't.
Like Nikola Pekovic, which we were swapping stories about in the pre-production meeting about our both in-person interesting stories about Peck from years past. But I don't want to get into the Michael Olowen Candy days. Can we get into those?
That's
Wally Zerbiak. How far down the rabbit hole do you want to go here before we actually talk a little bit of Gopher football?
We better not. What I do want to make sure that we mention, Ryan, I don't know if you've noticed this because, you know, you are probably the baby boomer as it comes to technology on the podcast.
That is unfair because you are living and breathing every single day of your life in tech because that's your day job.
That is my day job. So I consume the majority, I shouldn't say the majority, but a good portion of my podcast through Spotify. Spotify now has comments on episodes. I actually didn't notice this. I don't listen to our podcast, so I didn't notice there, but I started noticing on other podcasts that I consume. And generally, I'm going to start monitoring that. So if people want to drop comments, leave comments at us. Maybe we'll bring them up from time to time. If you have a question or you want a clarification, I think that's actually a pretty good It's a pretty good forum to get feedback from those that maybe aren't on Gopher Illustrated. I know that you converse with many people on Gopher Illustrated with regards to things that we talk about in the podcast, etc. But yeah, at the end of the day, I think that's a good opportunity. And a good reminder too is like rate and review the podcast wherever you listen. There are these things called algorithms, and those algorithms do make it easier for people to find us. I don't know why it makes it easier when they're rated and reviewed, but for some reason there's engagement, and we appreciate when you do that. We used to, do you remember when we used to ask for people to leave comments and we'd read the comments?
Well, we asked for rate and reviews, which again, this audience we're very appreciative of. Again, it's thousands of downloads per episode, which I will say again, we're very grateful for.
Yes.
And when you leave a review on whether it's Apple, whether it's Spotify, whatever your podcasting platform is, you have the opportunity to leave words underneath. And trust me, we read them. I understand. And I say this to someone who gets yelled at on the internet every day by whether it's a Gopher fan, a player parent, a recruit parent, an opposing fan bases, fanboy, fangirl, whatever it may be. You never know what you're going to get on a given day, but they are overwhelmingly positive, and so we're very appreciative of that.
Yeah, for sure. I do like those. I also enjoy reading them from time to time. I appreciate some of the comments that come in, and some of them are very funny as well. Some of them are very snarky, which I really appreciate. So I think my favorite one of recent memory was, I love the podcast, that breakdown. A thoughtful breakdown of the team, updates on recruiting, recaps, so much better than what you get from the quacks who are on AM radio for a reason. for the record, the people on AM radio are probably doing a pretty good job, but like generally speaking, calling them quacks was funny to me.
It's some kind of vernacular that I'm going to try to incorporate into my everyday life. I know that there's already, I've had a couple of fans come up to me and say that on this podcast, there is some side bet drinking games for our how animated I get if I drop in a great googly moogly, sweet giblet of juniper, sweet Moses of Mary. I'm trying to cover them all so we can have some fans, as they're listening to it, enjoy a cocktail or two. Since it's been 18,
just not while you're driving.
But trust me when I say we're recording today because I've heard you. I've seen your emails, your messages, your in-person. I've had people say, guys, it's been since January the 14th since you guys have actually done a podcast. And with me heading on an Alaskan cruise of all places, I've never been on a cruise. I figured we should probably get a couple of these out now that the roster is stable, now that it's prior to the Summer Splash recruiting weekends. Luke, Buer, and I found some time here. So today, I think the plan is, Luke, we're going to run through the offensive side of the ball now that spring ball has come and gone. Now, as always, if you want to have Gopher football news in your life in between four-month updates, every day of my life is on gopherillustrated.com, to which people know way too much about me. I answer questions. I do everything, spring practice reports, yada, yada. That's where you should go. And the only other disclaimer I will put here, Luke, before I start is this. For the player parents, I don't hate your son if I don't talk overwhelmingly positive about them.
Or if you don't talk about them at all, right?
Correct. I don't hate them. I'm not forgetting about them, but I'm going to tell you how I believe things are. I'm always wrong. Just ask my wife. And if I am wrong, I will rectify that come the fall. But I'm going to tell it how I kind of see it and how my sources see things heading into the fall here. But I'll also say this. If I have any of those sources listening, I don't hate your team, your position group, whatever it may be. We appreciate you listening, each and every one of you. But there are certainly a lot of things to get to, but I want to have that out there to try and rectify the phone calls, text messages, emails, whatever that may be. So thank you for letting me get that out of the way.
Yeah, I'm good with a good disclaimer. So we should get into this. You know, one thing that's always interesting about spring practice, one is, Ryan, you don't get to see much of it. I don't know if you know this, but you personally haven't gotten to go to many of these practices. So you're formulating opinions on really limited information. And I commend you for producing so much content with such limited information.
For the record here, that is Luke Buer saying that. Not
I'm trying to egg you on, and you didn't
about the level of access here before I get the phone calls from you people about that.
I'm trying to like feed you there, and you didn't even take the bait. And
trust me when I say I wish it was like Wisconsin, where I think Wisconsin, I think like 10 practices are open, which then I get to hear Justin Garden, Chip Scoggins tell me, well, you wouldn't want to go to every one of those anyway. And I'm like, well, what else am I going to do?
Yeah,
I like doing my job. I like going to practices. I like talking to people while I'm there. I like getting my own opinions, hearing other opinions, and meshing them all together. That's what you kind of learn now that you're 15 years into a job. But yes, I'm only able to see 3 practices. I obviously talk to a lot of different people within the program and formulate opinions, run it by them. They run it by me, things like that. But yeah, it's, or even this, I haven't talked to the assistant coaches yet outside of the coordinators, which, yeah, that's me on record saying that. We're in mid-May. Normally I get to talk to the assistants who are only available usually once a year, which I have thoughts and feelings about, but I'd rather not be on an hour-long phone call about how gracious I should be. So working on that for Gopher Illustrated members as well, trying to get the assistant coaches. I understand they're on the road, but they also do have free time. So, yes, it's a lot of these observations or thoughts on a depth chart are based off of 3 practices, but there is a lot to get into within it, yeah.
Okay, so maybe where we'll start is let's start at running back. How about running back is a position group that you probably have the most highly, I don't know, visible player is maybe the best, probably the most production back with Darius Taylor who returns. But then beyond him, it's pretty much kind of a lot of questions, and they brought in a number of bodies, Ryan. This is an opportunity for you to get to see them. Some of the fans get to see them, but they're going to have to be blending in because we know Darius Taylor can't and shouldn't be taking all of the carries, right? Especially as he'll be a feature part of both the running game and the passing game. So yeah, where do we kind of stand post spring with running back?
This is a position that in the last 4 months has seen a significant amount of transition, not only with the personnel, but even with their coach. As the Gophers running back coach from last fall, Nick McKissick-Luke, is now the running back coach for the New York Football Jets, which Minnesota lost 2 position coaches to the NFL. We'll talk about it on the defensive side for the other one. But I'll tell you, I didn't see that one coming because I think Nick McKissick-Luke is a good coach. I think he left some to be desired as a recruiter. Darius Taylor was able to stay healthy, and he was productive, caught 54 passes last year. I didn't know that I thought so highly of him that he should go to the NFL. But, hey, man, I'm wrong. The NFL thought I was wrong. And now he's with the New York Football Jets, which means Minnesota's got a new running back coach. And no, it is not Kenny Burns, who is out here getting fired in the middle of May and is under investigation. And we're going to see where that rabbit hole leads, because I've seen the conspiracy theories and talked to some other people about the conspiracy theories as well. And I tell you right now, it doesn't sound too great for Kenny Burns. So we'll see what ends up coming there. But Minnesota's running back coach is Jaden Everett. And people are thinking to themselves, who in the world is that? Well, he's someone that did work at Vanderbilt here recently. And we'll get to why that's important, because Minnesota took a transfer for Vanderbilt at the running back position. But he was most recently, he spent last fall as the assistant running backs coach at Michigan, which Michigan had a couple of guys drafted, I believe, in Khalil Mullings and Donovan Edwards. So they're able to get him. He was at South Alabama for a couple of weeks before Minnesota hired him. I think from what I have been told since he's been hired, he's certainly been, I think, a much better recruiter early on than what I saw from Nick McKissick-Luke. Now we'll see how it pays off here down the line. But you have a new guy there. And then when you eventually get into the running back room here, I'll remind folks, running back 2 from last fall through running back 5 are all gone. What happened? Marcus Major graduated. Jared Mangum graduated. Jordan Newbin is now at Kent State, Kenny Burns' former employer. C.A. Bengura, who is running back 5, he is now transferring back to Ohio, where he originally came from. Didn't work out for him here, so he elected to transfer back. You've also got more transfers out of the room, such as Jaden Wright, who is a redshirt freshman. He's going to be going to Luke's favorite Louisiana school, Louisiana Monroe. A young man by the name of Cortez LeGrant, who is a walk-on, elected to hit the portal. He's going to go to NDSU. So there's a lot of new names behind Darius Taylor, because there's really only 2 returners from last year. It's Darius Taylor and then the redshirt freshman, Femi Ijeboy, who Minnesota certainly likes, and he's going to be in competition behind Taylor. But the guys that are really going to be counted on are going to be Marshall's A.J. Turner, Washington grad transfer Cam Davis, which Luke Buehr's got the elite scouting report on, and we'll let him get into that here in a second.
Oh, yeah.
And then they also took Vanderbilt's Johan Cardenas, which I don't know how elite your Vanderbilt scouting reports are, but I think the point that Luke's trying to make here is Darius Taylor took a step forward and ran for almost 1,000 yards, 10 touchdowns, caught 54 passes, which I believe ended 2024 as the second most in Power Four, the most in the Big Ten. I mean, he also threw a touchdown to Elijah Spencer in the bowl game. So he caught one, run one, and he did it all for Minnesota last fall. But you don't want to overload him, which if you ask me today, I think you're going to have A.J. Turner, who did a lot of good things at Marshall. Someone that on over 100 carries last fall averaged something crazy like 8.3 yards per carry. He's got very good speed. He was here this spring. They were able to see more of him. I think he's going to be mixing in. You also have – do you want to give the Cam Davis scouting report, Luke, or do you want me?
I could give a Cam Davis scouting report. This is a guy that came from the University of Washington. He was – I would argue he was probably never the feature back, but he always played a pretty big role. His breakout season was probably 2021, I should say. He rushed for 522 yards that season, but the eye-popping stat is really the 13 touchdowns that he had. He excelled again in 2022, where he had 903 yards and then 15 touchdowns. He was kind of a touchdown machine. Then he obviously missed the 2023 season due to a knee injury that he sustained in fall camp, which ended up requiring surgery. And, you know, now he's here at the University of Minnesota. This is a guy, he's good. Like, he's probably a little bit more downhill, but I like him, and they use him a lot in short yardage situations, and he can catch the ball. That's one of the things that I like about him. I think there is some diversification there in his game as well.
Well, that's where, if you want to compare it to last season, you have Darius Taylor being Darius Taylor, but then you'll have a guy like, if you want to try to make comparisons, I would argue that A.J. Turner is probably a tier above what Marcus Major was in terms of pedigree coming in terms of explosive ability, where if you want to have a change of pace back with Darius Taylor, I think A.J. Turner is a good one for that. Like I said earlier, 104 carries at Marshall last year, 8.3 yards per carry, certainly someone with deep speed, the ability to at any point turn a corner and take it 70, 80 yards. And then with Davis, seventh year of football, to your point, missed all of the 2023 season, I believe. It was a patella tendon rupture, from what I've been told.
Yeah.
Which is why he's able to capitalize on a seventh year of college football. The Robbie Hummel route is what we like to call that. But even this past season at Washington, Luke, he was a team captain. So you got a high character guy who, if you're going to compare him to what Jordan Newbin did for Minnesota last fall, where he's your third down short yardage back, I would argue that Cam Davis's pedigree at a Power Four institution is better than what we saw from Jordan Newbin. So in theory, you have upgraded, in my mind, at that running back position. If those are going to be the one-for-one comparisons, I'll say, you still have guys like Femi Ijeboy, who Minnesota is high on, almost played in the bowl game. You've got a younger guy like Johan Cardenas as well. You've got some true freshmen coming in. But I think the thing is where does the ceiling happen for Darius Taylor? Now, we can spend a lot of time going over that. I've seen places like Pro Football Focus name him as a potential 2026 NFL draft guy. I'm not sure I'm there yet. I would love to be wrong, because if I'm wrong, Darius Taylor goes from rushing for 900-something yards and catching 50 passes last year to, I don't think Drake Lindsey's going to be as much of a checkdown guy as Max Brosmer was. But if he can run for 1,200 yards, and he's got the tape that he's got, I mean, he is one of the top 20 running backs in college football to me. Now, he was able to stay healthy last year, played in 12 consecutive games for Minnesota. Mm-hmm. But I think improving the depth of the room was important, especially because, Luke, I say this, it is an odd year. Now, I'm not just talking about in terms of the world and where it's at, because it's always an odd year in that.
Because aspect. It's 2025.
Why is that important, Luke? Well, let me run you through, because the last two odd seasons in terms of on the calendar year 2021 and 2023, the running back angry gods
did not
favor Minnesota.
Yeah.
In 2021, they were on running back five very quickly, which is why Kai Thomas and Bucky Irving were thrust into roles. And then in 2023, the same thing happened where we saw Jordan Newbin, running back five, get 200 carries for Minnesota. Now, I'm not wishing that upon the 2025 room. I'm just telling you, if you're a superstitious person, you should be knocking on every sweet piece of mahogany that you can find between here and Timbuktu that Darius Taylor stays healthy, which Minnesota's working towards it. Darius Taylor's working towards it again for a second consecutive year. But I would just say this. I think Minnesota feels, and I get why, that the floor is higher in that room, plus their running back four and running back five is in a spot where if injuries do hit, they've got guys that can take a workload, and they don't feel like they can only run one or two plays like maybe they did in 2023. But it all comes down to Darius Taylor here. If Darius Taylor can stay healthy, plus you can get Cam Davis some short yardage, third down, red zone, green zone, plus A.J. Turner getting the ball in space, that's where you want to be within this room.
So I do want to talk about A.J. Turner real quick. I didn't get to make any of the practices, so I didn't get to see him firsthand. But just, you know, kind of looking at stats, et cetera. One, it looks like that he is actually going to be a junior, if that's correct.
So he and Darius Taylor could, in theory, be back for 2026, which the staff is well aware of.
Okay, yeah. And then the interesting thing, too, to me is that he had very pedestrian freshman year. And then his sophomore year, I guess he redshirted because he's limited to three games. But then his sophomore year was very much a breakout season where he rushed for, like, your point, 8.3 yards per carry. And I think the thing that's eye popping to me is the 280 yard touchdown runs that he had in the season. But he didn't have a lot of receptions, right? He only caught eight balls on the season, but he did have two touchdowns on that. So I see him probably, I think you alluded to this just a little bit before, is he's probably that guy you're trying to get into space and you have special packages for. He maybe can be in every down back, but I'm curious if you think it can he can excel at the Big Ten level when he was obviously at the Sun Belt before.
Yeah, he was a second team all Sun Belt guy last year, and you hear 104 carries in 11 games and you're thinking to yourself, why? And well, I looked into this because I was curious as to everybody else. There was not a single Marshall running back that got 20 carries or more in a game last year. They essentially split it between Turner and two other guys. And maybe that's because they wanted to keep all of them healthy. All of them possessed a little bit different of a strength, and they wanted to keep teams on their toes. I don't know that I see A.J. Turner as a 20-carry-a-game guy, but if you're going to give him between 8 and 12 touches a game, which is where he was at last year in the Sun Belt, he's someone that can certainly add something in my mind with his speed, because he had four carries of 65-plus yards last year, which Darius Taylor is faster than what people think, which is why he has an 80-yard touchdown underneath his belt. But he is a change of pace in terms of he is someone that wants to get north-south, just like Marcus Major did. But I think he's got probably a little bit better vision in that regard. But if it goes back to, I'm going to assume that it was Marshall's offensive coordinator's direction that we don't want to give any one of these guys anything. Now, I think Cam Davis can hold a workload of 15 carries to 20 carries. If it comes down to it too, plus you've got the Femi Ijeboys and the Johan Cardenases of the world that can also help you there. But I don't know outside of Darius Taylor that I see really any of these guys getting 20 or more carries a game.
All right. You ready to jump to wide receiver?
I suppose.
Okay. So let's look quickly at departures. You've got Daniel Jackson graduation, Elijah Spencer graduation. Christian Hoskins is now a transfer. Tyler Williams is a transfer. And then TJ McWilliams is a transfer. But you bring in a number of guys. I want you to comment on the number of guys they brought in. But then the returners, you've got Lamaki Brockington and Quentin Redding. You've got Christian Driver, who we saw a fair amount last season. You've also got Eric Lanier. Is it Lanier?
Kenrick Lanier.
Kenrick Lanier. Oh, I can't read. Who would have guessed that?
Actually, you're a Wilmer guy, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. Well, you know, I get a little ahead of myself sometimes. Can you tell me the backstory on Hayes? I think he goes by Duke Hayes, right? But
Nuke Hayes, you're getting Nuke? There.
Oh, I'm getting there. Okay, yeah. But That was confusing to me. How did he get Nuke as a nickname?
That goes back to when he was in the recruiting process. I think it's a childhood nickname.
Okay.
His name is Donnell Hayes.
Donnell, yeah.
That's what everybody calls him by. I think it just goes back to where he's from in Florida.
Okay. And then freshman Jalen Smith also returns. So, but they took a number of transfers, and a number of transfers really that are, I think, are good gets if you peek at their stats and kind of how they were perceived as prospects as well.
Yeah, and Matt Simon is still the coach, been with PJ Fleck now for over a decade. He was someone that was up for the Patriots wide receiver job here, didn't end up getting it. So Matt Simon is back for another year, and that's where this is another position. The skill positions for Minnesota are going through an immense amount of transition. We just talked about running back, but you mentioned Daniel Jackson is now a undrafted free agent for the Houston Texans. Not sure I've seen where Elijah Spencer has latched on. But those two accounted for 80% of the receiving yards and 81% of all receptions from the wide receiver room last fall. Like they were everything for the receiving core. And now you are going through who steps up. And that's one of the questions I've certainly gotten from people at Gopher Illustrated. I've been answering that over the last few months is, what does it look like now? And I think for this room specifically, I don't know that I see one specific guy getting the alpha workload that we saw Daniel Jackson get the last two seasons, where he is getting just an absurd target share of 35-40% like Daniel Jackson would get on a given week. I think the strength of this unit is going to be their depth. Now, they have guys that have ceiling on them, guys like Christian Driver, guys like Jalen Smith, who I'll get into, Javon Tracy, Malachi Coleman, the Nebraska transfer. But so many of these guys are still fighting for a position, and that's where I'd say about the only two guys, well, I would tell you, if there was a game tomorrow, if that Buffalo Bulls game were tomorrow, I think your starting receiver core would be Javon Tracy, the Miami of Ohio transfer, Logan Loya, who is I'm trying to think of my Patriot slot receivers over the years, Julian Edelman, Danny Amendola, type where he is going to be your third down and short yardage guy. He's going to be the slot receiver for Minnesota. And then you would have Lamecki Brockington out there. But I think it's, if for fans who want to dream on it, I think that's where that would be that next tier of the Christian Drivers and the Jalen Smiths and the Malachi Colemans and the Kendrick Laniers of the world, where they're the ones with the ceiling on them. I think Javon Tracy certainly has a ceiling. If you ask me today, who leads the Gophers and targets this fall is Javon Tracy. Every practice I was at, he was making plays, certainly down the field, which I know that, and we can talk about it here in a second when we end with it. I don't want to start negative and end positive. I'd rather end negative with the bit, because Matt Simon does not have a great track record of immediate impact transfers, and that has to change this year. And that starts with Javon Tracy and Logan Loya, who are expected to have significant roles. But Javon Tracy was an all-MAC performer a year ago. I think he is someone that can be a Daniel Jackson light type of player. Again, I'm not comparing him to Daniel Jackson, even though they're similar in stature. But I think Javon Tracy is someone I'm confident in. I told you already, I think Logan Loya is among the same types as the Danny Amendolas of the world if things break right for him. And he led UCLA in, I think he was the leading receiver for UCLA in 2023.
Yeah.
And even last year, he was arguably among the most improved players they had at UCLA, because in 2023, he struggled with drops. And then last year, I don't think he dropped a pass.
I think it's worth noting, though, like I was trying to reconcile at least the you know, dropping. No, I shouldn't say dropping, but like having 30 less receptions. Like, I wonder how much of that was just quality of opponents being in the Big Ten.
Yeah, it's certainly a change going from the Pac-12 to the Big Ten and things like that. But it's a guy who caught over 100 passes for UCLA,
yeah, double-digit for sure.
Touchdowns. He's someone with a very high floor that I think you need for an inexperienced quarterback like Drake Lindsey's going to be. But I want to see it from Lamecki. I'll say this. With Lamecki Brockington, or as Luke, what do we call him on this podcast?
Lamecki Rocketship.
Your guy and your son's guy, Lamecki Rocketship. mean, he's had some bad luck in that regard. With was supposed to have a bigger role, and then he has an injury in the 2023 season against Louisiana that robs him of essentially the entire season. And then Spencer takes a step forward last fall.
Well, he's also injured last fall, right?
Ahead of Lemecki Brockington to grab and seize whatever he wants.
Yeah.
But even again this spring, which has kind of been a theme here, he was banged up a little bit. And that's where you get to that next tier of the young guys, where I know there's a lot of hopes and dreams for fans on guys like Malachi Coleman, who is a former top 100 recruit overall back in the day. Didn't work out at Nebraska, and unfortunately for him, he suffered a lower leg injury. I think it was a foot injury specifically that cost him most of the spring, which is why I'm not as bullish on him making a 2025 impact to some others, just because he missed most of the spring. Now he's projected to be healthy for the summer and going into fall camp. But it's a couple of younger guys like Jalen Smith and I'd say Kenrick Lanier that may have passed him in that next tier to go with Christian Driver, where Driver has all of the ability in the world. I'll say this. He's the son of Donald Driver, longtime Packers great. And you saw Minnesota really try to go to him in September last year, but there were some mental lapses in route running, some drops that eventually he got phased out of the game plan. And now in year two in Greg Harbaugh's system, Matt Simon's system, PJ Fleck's receiver system, there's hope that he can take a step forward. Now, again, I think 2026 is probably a more realistic for that. But even a young guy like Jalen Smith, where I think I wrote this during the spring and we got quotes from PJ Fleck and Greg Harbaugh about him, is if there was one player at receiver that turned more heads than I think anybody in terms of what expectations were compared to what they are now going into the summer and fall, it's for the Mankato West redshirt freshman Jalen Smith. I mean, by the time that final media practice came around, he was starting. Now, I'm not telling you against Buffalo you're going to see that young man out there starting, but what I will tell you is Jalen Smith is going to be someone that they are very, very excited about, someone that I think mixes in, and if he can seize the role in fall camp, he is battling Lemecki Brockington for that X receiver position. Now, he's a redshirt freshman. I don't think he's ever caught a pass. I know he played in the bowl game, but they are very bullish on him long-term. Plus, Kenrick Lanier was someone that this time last year, Luke, he started spring well, but then he kind of hit a wall and then he didn't finish as strong. Well, from what I've been told, he really burst through that wall and he remained consistent. So that's where I started this receiver talk with. I think depth is kind of where the strength is. And I'm a little surprised none of these guys transferred out. Even a guy like Nuke Hayes is another one you can factor in the mix here. Plus, you've got a couple of guys coming in June and the true freshman, Bradley Martino, who is a four-star, Legend Lions. Depth is the name of the game here. And in my mind, that's where, for Matt Simon, they have to continue to push each other. But I will end by saying this, Luke. I mean, I mentioned it earlier. I mean, they cannot have Javon Tracy and Logan Loya and Malachi Coleman just give them nothing. You go back to 2023, Minnesota took Corey Crooms from Western Michigan and was an all-MAC guy, struggled. Just 28 receptions. Elijah Spencer, only 9 receptions. And then eventually Elijah Spencer catches on in year two. But even last year, Tyler Williams, who the former Georgia transfer receiver who's now going to be going to South Florida, him and Christian Driver combined for 8 receptions. That, I mean, you can't have these significant drop-offs for a room that is going to be replacing so much production. So I'll say this. Matt Simon's got to get Javon Tracy and Logan Loya up to speed. They cannot have them come slow out the gate against a couple of quality, I would say, group five. Now, I don't know what which conference is Cal Berkeley in now? Is it the ACC, AAC?
It's the ACC.
Okay. Well, you can't have them start slow against Buffalo, who I think is a quality MAC team. Mm-hmm. We'll get into Cal Berkeley. I mean, no team was decimated more, I think, in the portal than Cal Berkeley was. But they have to have these guys start fast by the time that October comes and some real quality opponents get on the schedule. they have to be rolling. So I think Matt Simon's got to make sure this isn't the third consecutive year that your supposed impact transfers aren't impactful, at least to start the season.
Yeah, and we can debate this later. This is probably not the podcast for it, but you know, when you talk about Crooms and like maybe not meeting some of the expectations that others have, I think there's an argument to be made around factors outside of their control. Things like trust in the quarterback, play calling,
accuracy in 2023,
accuracy, like, you know, offensive line, you know, all that. I don't want to throw shade on them. Success in football is a coordinated effort between multiple players. It's fair to say like, hey, these guys haven't panned out, but I think it's a larger issue that we'd have to probably unpack. In general,
it's complex, and yeah, it's not just on Simon's shoulders. But I would just say, I mean, shame. What's the old George Bush quote?
I don't know. Probably like, watch this drive. I don't know. I'm not a big politics guy, but
fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice.
Yeah,
you know, that's where I'm just telling you.
Yeah, I hear you.
It's not just on Simon's shoulders. But ultimately, it's his position group, and it's been two consecutive years, and I'm just telling you, it cannot happen three straight years, because if Javon Tracy and Logan Loya specifically just don't have a 50th percentile outcome or better, like the transfer receivers of yesteryear have not attained, that is a major problem. And that's one of the things where if something bogs down this offense, that's where I think I would start.
It's also interesting that we talk about it as like he's missed on the transfers. They've missed it in high school recruiting too, right?
Why, like, they had to take so many high school or so many transfers.
Yeah. I mean, it's more systemic than just transfers, but yeah. Okay. Yeah. Can we talk tight end?
Let's do it.
All right, returners. Jamison Gears is back after a nice junior season. I think there's opportunity for him to improve. Clearly, he's a nice player. Frank Bierman's back. Jack DeSano, Pierce Walsh, Sam Peters, Jacob Simpson, and then Julian Johnson. They also added a graduate transfer from Purdue, Ryan. I should mention quickly just the departures. Nick Kallerup goes on to graduation. Do you know if anybody picked him up in the NFL?
He is with the Seattle Seahawks now in minicamp.
Good on him. And then Nathan Jones transferred. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about the addition in Drew Biber, I think is how you pronounce that. He probably fits that mold of a Nick Kallerup, I would assume. But you fill me in.
Yeah, it's another spot where Kallerup graduates, who is your co-keef Y tight end, who was a significant run-blocking asset, and he was able to rebound off, a step back in 2023, took a step forward again in 2024, which is why he's now trying to continue his football career with the Seattle Seahawks as a UDFA. But for this position group specifically, I think you heard me talk a lot about it at wide receiver. I think there's going to be a lot of rotation going on, where Jamison Gears finally last year, after waiting for years behind Brevin's man Ford, is able to play 500 snaps. And there were some really good moments, which is the 50-50 ball touchdown against Wisconsin, the game-winning touchdown catch against Illinois, where Minnesota fake tush pushes it. He goes out in the flat, catches that one. He was also the recipient of the trick play touchdown against Penn State. All massive plays in each one of those contests. But there are also some not so good, with the late fumble against Rutgers, which was a significant part of the Gophers not being able to pull it off in Piscataway. He had a team-leading 5 drops. That's not great. And then there were inconsistencies from game to game as a run blocker. Now he's a senior, his final year. I mean, what's next for him? I think he has the ability, because I think I'm higher than most on what Jamison Gears is, because I think fans only remember the drops, like the one against UCLA, where if he catches that one early,
that's
been a big gainer. But he was getting his feet wet, which, look, I understand that he is of legal drinking age, but he had only played under 200 full-time snaps on offense prior to that. And that's a problem. And so you've got to be in it. You got to go through it. And he went through it last year. So I think there's a ceiling yet for Jamison Gears. But I also say this, I think he plays around 500 snaps again. Mm-hmm. Now, how do they replace Nick Kallerup? And that's a good question. I don't think Drew Bibber, one for one, is that same type of guy. I think Drew Bibber is more of a do-it-all type of tight end, where Nick Kallerup played almost 500 snaps, a lot of it as an inline, Y-blocking tight end. Now, Bibber comes to Minnesota, as you mentioned, from Wisconsin. From Purdue. He is a Cedarburg, Wisconsin native. And he was primarily a guy who mixed in on special teams, was their tight end too, because, and you're thinking, well, why would the Gophers want the tight end too? Why didn't he get more opportunity? Purdue sucked. Well, it's because they had arguably the best tight end in the transfer portal that transferred to Ohio State, and Max Clair, who I think is going to be a significant weapon for Ohio State. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm just telling you, I don't have monumental expectations for Drew Bibber. But between him and Frank Bierman, changed his number this offseason, Luke.
Oh, great.
85 to 44. Do you know who number 44 is in the NFL for the – I think he was with the – I'll say this. Here's your clue. We're going to find out. NFC West and his wife is actually a big-time – she dresses a lot of the NFL players now, from what I understand.
He's the fullback, yep. And it's a goofy last name.
It is a goofy last name.
Starts with like a J or something. I don't know it.
Kyle Hughescheck is Frank Bierman's idol.
Okay.
Which is why he changed his number to 44. And
wasn't Colton Beebe 44 also? Like maybe that was a ode to Colton Beebe.
Colton Beebe. Boy, that's a deep cut.
Yeah, I gotta see if he was, what number was he?
I think he was around 44.
Yeah, what number? Yeah, he was 44. Yes, look at that. So proud of myself.
Colton Beebe. Oh. All right. I got to stay focused here before I go down that rabbit hole. But I think between the three of them, where I think, and I mentioned fullback, Minnesota was messing around with some I formation stuff here this spring. Now, again,
okay,
people mess around with a lot of things in the spring to get a feel for what the strengths of their team are. They wanted to try and change up some things, which we are the first ones to tell you the run game inconsistencies last year were maddening, where you can run all over the field on USC and then the next week not be able to open a hole. So they're trying to change some things. I don't know if they're going to keep the fullback in it. We'll find out. But if they do, that's where Frank, and what I like to affectionately call him, Frank Wham Block Bierman. You saw him do that a lot last fall. Him and Bibber are going to try to fill the shoes there. Now, when you want to get further into it, I still think we're a year away, because next year, Jamison Gears is gone, Drew Bibber is gone, Frank Bierman is gone, and that's where the young crew of Pierce Walsh, and I spent a lot of time last offseason talking about Pierce Walsh. Now, maybe it's the former collegiate tight end in me that likes to show some love to these guys, but unfortunately for him, he had his entire 2024 season robbed because of a hamstring injury that re-injured. But I think we're a year away from the Pierce Walsh, Jacob Simpson, Julian Johnson core really getting into it, where they're going to be, I'd say, more athletic. But there's a lot of transition that's going to be going on within this group. Now, we've spent probably too much time for people's sake on the tight end room, but that's where it's going to be Gears. It's going to be Bibber. It's going to be Frank Bierman. If there's an injury, Pierce Walsh, to me, is the next one that can step in. Plus, you've got some young guys like Jacob Simpson who played in the bowl game last year. But that's another spot where I think Minnesota would tell you they feel good about their depth here, but we're going to see how much ceiling there is for someone like Jamison Gears in 2025.
We good to move on to offensive line?
I suppose.
Okay. Looking at returners, I swear I haven't seen this name even once. I'm going to absolutely butcher it. Aluma Nikili.
You nailed it.
Oh, nice. Look at that.
Your enunciations have significantly improved here in the last 12 months, Luke.
Or at least the last 5 minutes.
As you butchered about three names here so far.
So Spencer Alvarez, Tony Nelson, Greg Johnson, Ashton Beers, Jerome Williams, Reese Tripp, Nathan Roy, and then Brett Carroll are your returners. Key departures I'll hit on would be Ariante Ursary, who was obviously drafted by Houston. Tyler Cooper, I think, ended up with the Packers. Quinn Carroll, I don't know if he latched on with anyone.
He got a mini camp invite. I thought it was with the Philadelphia Eagles, maybe.
Okay. Okay, yeah, then Martez Lewis transferred. Let's see, Jackson Hunter graduated, and then Philip Daniels obviously transferred before the season really had actually concluded. Can you also fill us on key additions?
Yeah, this is a spot where Brian Callahan's got his work cut out for him. Who is Brian Callahan? No, he's not the Tennessee Titans head coach, even though that is his name. He is the Gopher offensive line coach, and you're replacing your left tackle, who became a second-round draft pick for the Houston Texans. You're replacing your left guard, who is a UDFA for the Green Bay Packers now. The Wisconsin native gets to play for the Packers. I know he's pretty excited about that. Plus, you've got some depth guys like Martez Lewis, who's going to Northwestern, and then your projected starting tackle somewhere, and Philip Daniels gets poached by Ohio State, which he's an Ohio native. Now, was there some tampering going on behind the scenes? Who's to say?
Did he, I don't know if you followed, but he get some run in spring practice, like in terms of in the starting rotation, or how is he viewed so far?
He did, but I'll say this. Ohio State was then incredibly active in the transfer offensive line department.
Interesting.
In the springtime, which tells me they don't feel great about what they have coming. Now, I would have told Ohio State back when, if you're expecting to plug and play Philip Daniels at tackle at a high level, such as what Ohio State aspires to be every single year, they are the reigning national champions for a reason. That was never going to be the plan for Philip Daniels. I mean, would he have started at Minnesota at left or right tackle this year? Very likely. But he's a redshirt sophomore, and he's going to, there's going to be some lumps within that. You saw that throughout the entire month of November started for the Gophers. He wasn't an instant plug and play. So I'm not incredibly sure what got lost in translation there from what they thought to what they were getting, but maybe he ends up starting. And I still think he's got a great ceiling ahead of him, but that's in 2026, 2027.
Yeah.
I don't know what expectations will be for him this fall, but that's where you look at it. And I know people will yell at me and say this is semantics, but it's going to be five new starters along the offensive line. Okay, Ryan, Greg Johnson and Ashton Beers come back. What are you talking about? They're going to be starting in new positions.
Yeah.
Like Greg Johnson is going to start at left guard. And I talked about that significantly on Gopher Illustrated since January on, where Greg Johnson talked about it with me here this spring as they approached him during December. Prior to the bowl game and said, hey, would you be open to moving back to guard? And he's like, absolutely, because it just didn't go well at center for him. And that's okay. As long as you admit that you tried something, you tried to get him to be the next John Michael Schmitz, and too many penalties, too much thinking, wasn't playing to what I think his athletic capabilities are. So they're going to transfer him back to left guard, which I know no one is more excited about that then Dinky Town Athlete's Own, Gopher Gridiron Radio Zone, Derek Burns, who has been asking for that, at least in my text messages, for a very long time, to move Greg back to left guard. And that's where he practiced exclusively here this spring. Ashton Beers, who started at right guard for Minnesota for a time, is now going to be your starting center. And then you're going to have position battles at the other spots. You got left tackle, who redshirt freshman Nathan Roy, who played in the bowl game, is going to be battling against Khalid Tafai, another Washington Husky transfer. So, Luke, would you like to attempt to give a scouting report on Khalid Tafai before I come in with my own thoughts?
Big, young, kind of got hurt, but I can't add a lot more. I didn't notice him a lot, which maybe is good.
So, Khalid Tafai redshirted in 2023. And then he got his first career start as a redshirt freshman at left tackle. So he was essentially the Washington Huskies version of Philip Daniels, where they weren't happy at Washington with their play at left tackle. So they said, let's go to the young guy. So he gets his first career start against USC, starts the final three games of the season for them. Now the PFF stuff isn't great yet. I mean, 300 snaps in the Big Ten at left tackle when you're just thrown into the fire is difficult for anybody. And that's where Luke's guy, Jed Fish, former Adam Weber offensive coordinator at Minnesota.
That was
Jed
a hot Fish. Minute.
Well, we just talked to Adam Weber on Parent of Spare here the other week, which I had plenty of Adam Weber stories from back in the day.
You guys should continue doing that. That's actually pretty good.
But Jed Fish said this in November about Khalid. He said, Khalid Tafai has continued to improve. He's going to be a really good player for us. I mean, they started him at left tackle as a redshirt freshman. You don't do that unless you have aspirations of what he could be. Now, Tafai has missed the entire time. He got here in January, but he's been recovering from, I believe it's a shoulder injury that he sustained at Washington. So he missed the entire spring. And that's where Nathan Roy, I think, opened some eyes here, where expectations for Nathan Roy were always high. He was a former four-star, former top player in Wisconsin coming out, which is why they played him in the bowl game, outside of they weren't exactly sure who was going to play left tackle, since Ursary wasn't going to play in the bowl game. But they like Nathan Roy a lot. And I know the assumption is that Khalid Tafai eventually wins out. I don't know that I'm operating under that assumption anymore, because I think Nathan Roy proved a lot to some staff members here this spring that he can hold up as a redshirt freshman. And it's also going to be on Tafai to say, when I'm healthy here in the coming weeks and months, and he's got to go earn that thing. And that's the thing I think I'm excited about with this offensive line, is I think there's seven, maybe eight guys that they feel decent about, but you're going to have competition. And every single day, you know, you're going to have to bring it. So that's where at left tackle, I'm going to be very curious to see who ends up winning in fall camp between Nathan Roy and Khalid Tafai. Now, you get to the right side of the line, and that's where I think the other transfers of Marcellus Marshall, who comes to Minnesota with almost 2,500 career snaps between Kent State and Central Florida. I mean, this dude has started a position, or has started a game at every position along the offensive line in his college career. So talk about a guy with versatility, which is something that I know Brian Callahan likes a lot. I think he is going to be in competition at right guard, more or less, with Tony Nelson, the Tracy, Minnesota native, everybody's favorite thrower on the Gopher track team as well. Tony started, I believe, the bowl game for Minnesota at guard. And then at right tackle, I think you're going to be with those same two guys, with Khalid Tafai, Nathan Roy, and then Dylan Ray is the other name there to know for me. Someone who played a lot at Kentucky the last couple of seasons. He's their utility man, played a lot at right tackle here this spring. Within the names there, Khalid Tafai, Nathan Roy, Greg Johnson, Ashton Beers, Tony Nelson, Marcellus Marshall, Dylan Ray. That's seven guys, of which I don't know that you're going to have the high-end talent necessarily right away here in 2025 from some of these guys, but I think the floor is one that I think is higher. And we talked about it all of last year, where collectively maybe the individual names were talented, but this was just a 2024 offensive line unit that could not figure it out from week to week. Now, I don't know if it's just because of the inconsistencies from center on, I think Greg Johnson moving back to guard is going to be a good thing for him. Ashton Beers at center, I think they feel good about that. Now, you're going to have to figure it out of who is your best five, and maybe they end up doing like they've done in some previous years and rotating guys. But they feel good about that seven there. And then, again, it gets a little bit precipitous with who's next after that. Again, Jerome Williams is a guy, that local kid who I know folks had expectations for. I don't know what to expect anymore, because he's coming back from an Achilles tear, which can zap a lot of things out of you. And then you get into more freshmen behind that. But it's going to be a challenge for Brian Callahan to figure out what the best starting five is. And they moved a lot of guys at a lot of different positions here this spring. But those are the seven that I think I feel most comfortable about saying they're the ones significantly competing in 2025 for starting jobs.
All right. I think that leaves us with one position left, and I think it's probably the bleakest in all of college football, or at least darn near close to that, Ryan. I think that was actually reported by CBSSports.com.
Who listens to CBSSports.com? I don't have my, that's not on my paycheck or anything.
No.
When it hits the,
No, I don't know. I think the only one they thought was even more bleak would be Oklahoma State. But yeah, let's talk about quarterback, huh? So returning, you have Dylan Whitkey, Max Shikanjanski, and Drake Lindsey. I do want to mention that I only can get Mac Shikanjansky because his dad played basketball at the University of Minnesota, and I've heard that name a lot. Otherwise, I absolutely would have butchered that one. Key departures are going to be Max Brosmer, who obviously started a quarterback last year. Also, Zach Pyron. He was here for just a hot minute. And then additionally, Jackson Colick, he also transferred. And then they brought in another quarterback since Pyron didn't work out, Emmett Moorhead. So this, again, the Bleak group. What do we know about the Bleak group, Ryan?
Before we get into the Bleak comment, Jackson Colick did not transfer.
Wait,
you're thinking
back
of Jeremiah, I think it's Finale, who was a walk-on.
Okay.
Jackson Colick is still here, early enrollee. Just want to make sure we get that out before the emails,
I just completely,
phone calls continue to come in.
I completely butchered my list. My bad.
Well, we're out of form.
Yeah.
It's been 4 months. You're doing your best. You're trying to
trying to flex those muscles.
So the article that Luke is referencing here, which is on top of mind for I think a lot of people, was CBS Sports is I forget the writer's name. I'll try to find it.
I'll look it up.
We kind of ran through, and that's where I'll step on my soapbox here for national media versus local media, especially at a place where Minnesota, where, as I have reminded a lot of different personnel who don that Maroon M that so many of you love, you are a $90 million program in revenue this past fiscal year, or the most recent year of fiscal data. The University of Minnesota football team, in terms of on the Excel spreadsheet, did $90 million in revenue. Yet there are, I would say, four of us that cover the program on a day-to-day basis, which is Andy Greeter, the Pioneer Press. You've Randy Johnson of Star Tribune, Daniel House of GopherGuru.com. And they should be thankful that I'm trying to think of how I want to phrase this to avoid Armageddon. It could be a lot worse with places like Ohio State or Iowa that have a lot more coverage of their teams. And there's, for a place like Minnesota, look, I'm here to tell you, I try to cover this program as best I possibly can. And that's what I try to do on Gopher Illustrated. And so many of you are members, and I'm very appreciative of that. But I also understand when I go on SiriusXM, or I go on other kind of national media spots and I get the questions I get, I can tell that not a lot of people pay attention to a spot like Minnesota, which is interesting to me because Minnesota has been a consistent bowl game. Well, I'd say bowl game winner, which is true, but they've been an average to above average Big Ten team here now for largely 5-6 years. Okay. So how much effort would it take to reach out to someone who covers the team on a day-to-day basis, say, what do you think of the quarterback spot?
I mean, this is exactly why you exist, Ryan, and this is also why
exactly. This
podcast
exists.
Exactly,
that's my
exists.
Point.
And you know, those people that largely focus on the national media, they have a very tough, or at the national level, right? They have a very tough job, right? This is why I value beat reporters over national pundits, because that job is challenging. You can't consume all of that data. And if you do, you're doing it from one position and one position only, which is usually some sort of analytics, right? You can't actually watch all of the games and get those theories, right? This is why, you know, if you listen, like we can go back to the Timberwolves, right? As an example, if you would have said last year, like, oh, there's no way that the Timberwolves can beat the Suns, and they swept them. If you listen to like Dane Moore's podcast or read, you know, Jace Frederick or some of these local people, they go, yeah, actually, I think this is a really good matchup for the Wolves. And then they swept them, right? And the same can be
Lakers
true.
Five, baby.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the same can be true here, like in this situation as well. Like, no shade to your guy at CBS Sports, Ryan, Will Backus, but like, I imagine he's never seen Drake Lindsey throw. And the reality is Drake Lindsey has thrown balls in collegiate games before. Yeah, he hasn't taken a bunch of them. But the reality is it's just based on probably some analytics that he's been able to compile and just unknowns. And that's not necessarily his fault, but he's got a job and he's trying to do his job the best he can.
He is. And I understand also that if you look across the Big Ten quarterback scene, of which I'm not here to tell you Drake Lindsey's a top five quarterback in the Big Ten. I don't even know if he's going to be a top half quarterback in the Big Ten this year. There's a lot of unknown with Drake Lindsey, and I'll be the first one to tell you that. But I would tell you that Minnesota's not always right in their evaluations. I would just say that there is a lot of internal expectations for Drake Lindsey. Now, I know a lot of you are going to say then in turn, and of which is justified, well, Ryan, aren't we just doing this whole thing 2 years later like we did with Ethan Kaliak-Manis, who was supposed to be the chosen one, and they didn't take a quarterback in a class to try and remain loyal to Ethan, and then Ethan comes out, and it was wildly inconsistent. We spent so many hours of our lives talking about first half Ethan versus second half Ethan and what happened, how it didn't go as planned. Now he's going to be starting for a third year in the Big Ten as he's going to be the starter for Rutgers again. But Ryan, why is it going to be any different? Well, here's what I would tell you. To me, the biggest difference between Ethan Kaliak-Manis at this stage, who I will continue to say, Ethan Kaliak-Manis has all the arm talent in the world, which is why he was highly recruited. Why he continues and remains to be a starting quarterback. He's going to end up starting 30 games plus for teams that think Rutgers was a bowl. Rutgers was a bowl team last year.
Yeah, I think so.
Minnesota was a bowl team the same year he started. So it's not like they're on awful teams. Not here to tell you they're good Big Ten teams. But the point I'm going to make with Drake Lindsey is, especially in year three with Greg Harbaugh, as the offensive coordinator, and Harbaugh talked about it here this spring, is they try to put a lot on the quarterback in terms of adjustments at the line of scrimmage. Now, I have spent many years. I remember the Kirk Shiroka days where everybody, I won't include everybody, but there was a section of the fan base that got very upset that whether it was Tanner Morgan, whether it was Ethan Kaliak-Manis, they got upset that the quarterback wasn't allowed to adjust things at the line of scrimmage. And they would look to the sideline to get it, and sometimes it would get in late, delay of game. Well, what are we doing here? Well, they don't know. Okay. Well, Greg Harbaugh's trying to change that. And one of the reasons why Drake Lindsey, I think the biggest difference for me between Drake and Ethan is I think Drake is a lot more adept in the system, knows how to change things at the line of scrimmage, feels comfortable with his knowledge of the offense, knows what to look for, knows how to get off a first read. Now, again, I watched a lot of Mitch Leidner light it up in practice, and it didn't translate to Saturdays, of which I had a long discussion with everybody's favorite, Mike Grimm. No one in this world, look, I won't be mean to Grimm with this, but he is on the captain. He captains the ship of the Rocco Baldelli has no idea what he's doing fan club. And as someone like myself who watches probably 150 Twins games every year, I'm getting sidetracked here, but Luke, I want to state this here for the record. Would you agree or disagree with this? There is no more, I shouldn't say meaningless, but least, how do I want to phrase this? Major League Baseball managers have the least amount of ability to make change compared to, say, the NFL or the basketball or hockey, I would say, because there's so many guys on a roster, so many just like different things to do. And that's where the Twins weren't very good during spring ball. And I heard all about it from Grimmer, and I love Grimmer. I do. Would you agree or disagree with the Major League Baseball manager just doesn't have as much power as a lot of the other head coaches of a lot of different sports?
Yeah, I think that's generally true because it's such an independent sport in general, right? It's a pitcher versus a batter in a set defense. So,
yeah, which don't get me started about $37 million Carlos Correa turning into Andrelton Simmons for those of you who are deep cut baseball players, which just now he's become a slap hitting Gold Glove, which there's a lot of value in that, but I'm getting sidetracked here. But I would just tell you, Drake Lindsey is a much more ahead of the game mentally with football knowledge than Ethan Kaliak-Manis was at this stage, which that's why Zach Pyron isn't here anymore. Zach Pyron was brought in January from Georgia Tech, of which he started games for them, played in 20 games to push Drake Lindsey. And I think Zach Pyron saw the writing on the wall that he wasn't going to win that quarterback battle, which is why he's now with Major Applewhite down there at South Alabama. And while PJ Fleck isn't going to announce it because he's PJ Fleck, I mean, Drake Lindsay is going to be the guy. And that's why I don't know what reasonable expectations are. And we can spend the next 3 months getting into that for what they are for Drake Lindsay. But I would tell you internally, there's a lot of expectations for him. Now, I'd like to remind those same people that redshirt freshman starting for the first time in the Big Ten, I don't know whatever their expectations are. I know some of them. I would tell them to knock them down a tier just because expectations and reality are always so different, especially for University of Minnesota quarterbacks. And whether it was Tanner Morgan's freshman year, Mitch Leidner's freshman year, Ethan Calliope-McManus's first time, like if he can just throw, and somebody asked me on Gopher Illustrated, what would I set the over-under at for passing yards for Drake Lindsay this year? If, say, he plays in 13 games. What do you think I remember what I initially said, but what do you think you would set it at for Drake Lindsay?
Passing yards, I'd probably go like 2,800 yards.
You said 28, that was?
Yeah, 2,800.
Yeah, I think I set mine at like 2,675 or something, which to a lot of fans is going to sound high. But you have to remember, and I actually did the research, because initially I said like 2,100. And then I thought to myself, that seems really low. And then I looked at every Big Ten bowl team from last year. I think like outside of Iowa, every single quarterback threw for 2,600 yards or more if they made a bowl game. And I expect Minnesota to be a bowl team. I'll tell you that right now. But if he can just complete 62% of his passes, throw, you know, in an ideal world for a 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio as a Big Ten starting quarterback, plus throw for 2,600, that's a great outcome for a redshirt freshman starting in the Big Ten for the first time. But there's just a lot of expectations for Drake internally is the thing I kind of want to say here, where he does have some prospect pedigree. I mean, he was, I think, the Gatorade Player of the Year. His final year at Arkansas, Arkansas tried to flip him late once they changed offensive coordinators. But Drake Lindsay is going to be the guy. And then the question is, who's the QB2? Is it going to be Dylan Wicke, who is now in his second year with Greg Harbaugh? Is it going to be Max Shikanjanski, Stillwater legend? Or is it going to be former Boston College and Old Dominion quarterback Emmett Moorhead, who looks like, I mean, do you know what Emmett Moorhead looks like, by the way?
Yeah, I did. I looked up his photo on 247, and he's got a nice beard and some flow.
Yeah, he is a California surfer guy, I'll tell you that much. But the Emmett Moorhead story is this, and again, I don't have incredibly high expectations for him, but you got to know the story at least, where it's, we go back to the 2022 season where he took over for former, I think, Notre Dame quarterback Phil Yurkovich.
Okay.
Started the final few games of the season, and Boston College loved him to the point where they took him to ACC Media Days that summer. Yet, from what I've kind of gleaned behind the scenes, there were some thoughts and feelings yet about who should be the starting quarterback, where it ends up being Thomas Castellanos by the time opening day comes. And then he finishes out the season, and then he transfers to Old Dominion last offseason, has a knee injury, doesn't play, hits the portal again. So they have a guy who has started games, a guy that there's some coaching trees there between PJ Fleck and some of the other coaches there. But make no mistake about this. This is Drake Lindsay's room, and there is going to be a drop-off from Drake Lindsay to whether it's Emmett Moorhead, Dylan Wicke, Max Shikanjanski. I don't really see a world in which Jackson Colick is going to be in that quarterback two competition, truthfully, by the time Buffalo rolls around. But I would just tell you, Minnesota doesn't really see their quarterback room as bleak. There's a lot of expectations in Drake Lindsay. Now, if something unfortunately happens to him injury-wise, then it will become bleak, and I get it then. But internally, I mean, Fleck even made the comment because we asked him about him. And Fleck never likes to make resounding statements in a positive light or negative light to the media, in my mind. But Fleck said this after one of the April spring practices to us media jackals. He said, and quote, "I think Drake is playing at a really high level. I mean, you got to give him his dues after practice nine. He's playing at a high level, probably higher than any young player I've ever had at that position," end quote. I'm just telling you, Fleck doesn't make statements like that without some proof.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from what they saw from Drake Lindsey this spring, they're very bullish on him, which is part of why I will continue to say Zach Pyron's no longer here. And I know everybody wants to have quarterback two and quarterback three in waiting. That's just not the way it is in college football these days with mm-hmm. the portal. And I've often said this, Luke. There are Netflix shows about dance moms and cheerleading moms of that nature. There needs to be one about quarterback parents or just quarterback dads. And I'm not specifically thinking about one specific. I'm just thinking about some of the guys over the years that I've talked to. They are some of the most, I'll say, interesting people out there in the world, especially with their sons as quarterbacks. But this is Drake Lindsey. This is Drake Lindsey's job to lose. I mean, something has to go horribly wrong in fall camp for Drake Lindsey to not be the starting quarterback for the Minnesota Golden Gophers in 2025. I would just tell you, as I've tried to spend the last 10, 15 minutes saying, Minnesota does not view their position there as bleak because of what Max Brosmer spent the last 12 months doing with Drake Lindsey, from what Drake Lindsey has shown them in practice. Now, I remind fans that what we see in practice versus what shows up on Thursday nights or Saturday mornings, Saturday afternoons have been very different, especially for Gopher quarterbacks of yesteryear. But I'm hoping that Drake Lindsey has a Adam Weber and Max Brosmer-esque glow up there to become, by the time he gets done with his starting tenure here, hopefully one that a lot of Gopher fans are excited about for a very long time.
Yeah, I think the other thing that we have to at least acknowledge is that, you know, you can say what you want about Ethan Calliope-Manis. He is not someone that Harbaugh picked himself, right? He inherited him in the position room. He picked Max Brosmer and he picked Drake Lindsey. And the results, albeit small sample size, were very good with Brosmer. I'm optimistic that they can be good with Lindsey as well. Again, small sample size, but I think it's worth acknowledging Harbaugh is on a trajectory that I think is very, very positive. Much better than
I. Be careful, Luke, because I like to tell people the second most hated guy on the team behind the head coach every single week is the offensive coordinator.
Yeah. But I've generally liked him in his 2 years calling plays, and I know it wasn't as good year one as year two. I thought a lot of that was execution and not necessarily scheme and calls. You can disagree with me if you want. That's fine. I generally liked his approach in the way he calls games. So I just generally am maybe a little more optimistic than most. You know, as one reviewer of our podcast said, we're awful and we need to take off our maroon and gold sunglasses. So, you know, to that listener, I'm sorry. I can't change my best for you. I guess I do have a bit of a bias, and my bias is shown.
Look, I think Drake Lindsey will get better from game one to game 13, but I think he'll be better in 2026 from 14 to 27 and then from 28 to hopefully 41. If that's the outcome for him, that's a really good outcome for him. I know that there are going to be bumps in the road, and I'm going to be the first one to tell you that for Drake Lindsey this fall. But I hope that by the time from Buffalo until the bowl game comes, that it's not going to be linear for Drake Lindsey, but you hope that by the time game 13 comes, they're in a much higher spot and a much higher floor at the quarterback position than they are right now, 12 months from now. It's going to take some time, but I think you're going to see some moments from Drake Lindsey that are going to make you excited. But again, we're the guys in maroon and gold colored glasses, apparently. We should be seeing it as bleak, Luke Buehr, but we'll find out who's right by the end of November.
All right. Yeah. We're going to have to keep receipts somehow and circle back to these. I'll have to start another spreadsheet. Okay, Ryan, I think that pretty much covers all of offense. I don't know if you have any kind of parting things that you want to make sure, maybe some miscellaneous. We hit all the position groups. as we're, you know, coming out of spring and into the summer here. Anything you want to jump on before we close this out?
I think the offense, as I view it, at least going into the summer here, has the opportunity to be more of the strength of the team compared to last year, where I think the defense did a lot. I mean, they worked off each other in a complementary fashion. I think I have more questions defensively than I do offensively right now. But I also acknowledge there's a lot of unknown, especially across every single position. Yeah, you have Darius Taylor, but you also have brand new running backs 2 through 5. Your receiver position is without 80% of their production from last year, and they're trying to figure out who is going to supplement that. Your offensive line is going to have new starters at most of the positions. And then Drake Lindsey, what are you going to get from someone that, as I continue to state, internally there's a lot of expectations for, but he's a redshirt freshman in the Big Ten. I think it has the opportunity to be the strength of the team, but there's so much that we still have to learn about this offense as we go throughout the entire month of September.
All right, yeah, it should be fun to follow. I sympathize with you, as I know you're going on vacation, and that means that there will be a number of commits. that is, all, at this point, it's a law. It's not just legend. It just happens. So sympathies to you and your wife as you're hoping to get some Wi-Fi over, I believe you said a cruise of some kind. So
going
hopefully,
up to Alaska, baby.
Yeah.
Cruise to Alaska.
Should
so
be fun.
Hopefully the Wi-Fi on the cruise is okay, but I'm also okay with putting my phone in the leaving it in the room for a bit. So okay. Hopefully the excursions on top of a glacier and some zip lining and some other things, it'll be a nice little getaway for at least a week.
All right, well, good stuff. We'll record a defensive podcast here soon. We maybe will air that while you're gone. Time will tell. But again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and go Gophers.